Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are. The boys have been back here listening to stuff or something, and my headphone settings were deafening. Yes, here we are. This is the horn. It is the ninth day of January 2015, and it looks like we've gotten to, 2015 is picking up where 2014 left off, but I suppose that's to be expected, isn't it? Good evening. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where, of course, you will find access to the chat room into which people are already merrily wandering. Good evening, Anatole and News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Texas D and ex-Dr. Firefly. Good evening also to longtime inveterate veteran, indefatigable chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. You too could be part of that merry band. It's real easy. Just run right over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and away you'll go. And you'll be part of the ongoing real-time multimedia extravaganza that is any given night on the horn. Also, of course, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the Listen Live player, which is handy for listening on a PC or a Mac. If you're on a mobile device, we recommend the apps from Stitcher and TuneIn and Utunes. And maybe someday, there will be a horn app so that one need never worry about clicking one's listening app and getting an ad for some disgusting oil company or, you know, some other right-wing dominated industry that is anathema to the message that we share here amongst the family commune congregation. Yes. Now, also, you will find access to the podcasts and the archives at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And finally, yes, the Contribute tab. That is how we keep all of this going. The Contribute tab is where folks go, unless you like to use the traditional United States Postal Service method. It's where folks go to contribute to keep this all on the air. Remember, we're not selling anything, and we're not paying any million-dollar salaries. There is no hangar, and there is no Gulfstream 5. There's no Maybach. There's no Bentley, no Rolls, no Porsche, no BMW, no Nissan GTR, no pool boy, no cabana boy, no landscaping, no. We're just running a little bitty hillbilly conversation radio operation, and we try to raise $150 a day because of the little bit of a hole that we got ourselves into, much of which was has been cleared up along the way. Instead of the $150 this evening, we're looking for $215. We'll chop off the five and say 21 at 10 or 10 at 21, 42 at $5 a piece, however you care to go about it. Now, this is, of course, Friday on the Front Porch. That means if you would like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the Front Porch, then, well, you need to send a contact request on Skype. Skype is very easy to use. Send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and you too will be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable of folks who participate in the conversation at the end of the week. Michael in the chat room pointing out it's been a long week, and indeed it has. Hey, good evening, Laborman. Laborman Gary has joined the conversation. And I have a feeling, well, more, like I said, more will be wandering by. It has been a long week. But I'm reminded today, and it's been on my mind all day long, despite whatever the for-profit media have been focused on. And when I arose this morning, the for-profit media were focused on continuing developments in Paris, or in France, in the Paris vicinity. I will work from the assumption that anybody who wants to know anything about that has already gotten it from somewhere in the for-profit media. Can we do that? Because I've had my mind elsewhere today. Truly. Something else has been on my mind. What's been on my mind today is something that happened a year ago, well, a year and about 12 hours ago, or a year and 12 days ago, because, see, we still don't really know. Because of the nature of the way things run. Here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. I'm talking, of course, about the Freedom disaster. It was referred to generally as the West Virginia water crisis, the West Virginia water disaster, the Freedom Industries disaster. Yeah, I narrowed it a little bit. It's, for me, at least, just the Freedom disaster. Freedom Industries was, of course, the progenitor of the disaster. They were a nasty little fly-by-night operation. Utterly and obsessively concerned with making a fast buck. Inside a governmental regulatory scheme that was almost non-existent. Because after all, why would we want to, in West Virginia, why would we want to regulate industries when them industries are job creators, right? Now, there's a word I haven't seen before. Gerald from the chat room pointing out aquapocalypse. And I thought I'd heard it all. Guess not. I'm looking for something here. Not having a whole bunch of luck. I thought we thought it might be interesting to go back a year and just check in, because I remember when news broke of this event. And for me, this day will always be significant, to say the least. Because this is the day that we learned the exact lack of value, as if there had ever been any doubt, the precise lack of value that West Virginia government and West Virginia business places on, and by business I mean the coal business and the businesses that support the coal business and the fracking business and the businesses that support the fracking business, we learned exactly what they thought of the rest of us. And I want to see, if I recall correctly, it was somewhere in here. Let me check. No, it's not.
I mean, it used to be. It used to be, exactly.
Okay,
I had a
little
friend
further.
Of mine who was, sure, here is that guy that you pay minimum wage. You send him down there to tromp around in it. And
okay, yeah, there's Devin. So we had announced it by then.
They put it into a coal car or whatever. I don't know anything about the coal industry.
Well, there's more to it than that, and we can get into it.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't understand.
It gets mixed up with other stuff, you know, other kinds of rock. You've got to get that all separated.
Oh, is that what it is, to purify the coal?
Okay, so we've got it narrowed down a bit. Yeah, big capital letters, Go Niners, from chat room moderator Sparky in the chat room, so. No.
Oh, okay, that's good, you know, so it's just, so it
hey,
just
Sandra.
Study irrational love and hate, right?
Well, but, you know, how did the Packers screw that up? I mean, the one great positive that they had going for them was the fact that they were playing in, what, 20 below?
Right. I was really confident, thinking, oh, that's going to be a good beat down. So I was a bit upset about all that.
Yeah. It'll be, it'll,
you know, they, yeah, whatever. You know, go, who do you got? Cam. Go Cam. Okay.
Yeah, Cam Newton.
Right. Anyway, Bob, listen, I'll let you go. I'm sure.
All right, Sandra, you have a wonderful evening. It was a great conversation, as always.
All right, talk to you soon.
Later. Bye now. What can you say, Sandra? It is 14 minutes past the hour, although it's not, and fan mail coming in for Sandra. Greg writing, I love Sandra. She always has something intelligent and insightful to say. And then Greg adds, one, when you control her, them's job-killing regulations. Here we are. Of course, they're only taking this out of an abundance of caution, according to West Virginia American Water President Jeff McIntyre. Yeah, this is it. This is it. I know. No, there's just something extremely.
You know, I'm like, oh my.
Yeah, in big capital letters, Go Niner, couldn't save seed for the subsequent years that follow, because thanks to the Terminator food seed developed by Monsanto and other big ag companies, woe is us. You know where this is going. Yeah. Soylent Green is us, without a doubt. And before I go back to the phones, lines open, by the way, 304-658-3333. An update to the water story out of West Virginia. I almost wish I'd brought this up with Sandra, because she would have gotten the irony of this. The chemical has been named, and it turns out to be toxic and possibly fatal to human beings who consume it. And there is a ton of it in the Elk River. The best coverage coming from the Charleston Gazette. Five counties warned not to use water. That's WVGazette.com. Rachel Melinda has the story. She notes that residents swarmed grocery stores, convenience stores, and anywhere else with bottled water on Thursday evening. shelves were quickly depleted. And then this. This is the real Lulu buried in the middle of the story. State and water company officials did not give an estimate on when the water might be safe to drink or use. Then the quote from Earl Ray, our governor, who says, every day somebody says something else makes you sick. The state of emergency will be in place until we are cleared by the Department of Health and Human Resources, DEP, and the company say that the water is safe, Tomlin said. You got that? We're waiting for the company to say that the water is safe. And by company, we mean the company. Which company? West Virginia American Water? Or Freedom Industries? Not clear. But here's how bad it is. Okay, Charleston is the largest city in West Virginia. It's a little pimple and nothing in most any other state. But the Department of Health and Human Resources, through Health Officer Dr. Rahul Gupta of the Kanawha Charleston Health Department, has said that restaurants, bars, daycare centers, and other businesses with a health permit in Kanawha and Putnam counties would be sent a message to cease operations immediately. Here's a hint. If some Sparkle Pony Sparkle solution that's absolutely benign gets into the water, that doesn't happen. Gupta said there are about 1,200 health department permits issued in Kanawha County and about 300 in Putnam County. So that's 1,500 businesses that have basically been crippled by Freedom Industries. Or do we have to do it this way? Freedom Industries. No, you get the gist of it. I remember how terrified and sick I felt when they added the name of the county where my grandchildren live to the list of counties with poisonous water. Within another 24 hours or so, a tweet would go out from the West Virginia Coal Association saying of 4-methylcyclohexane methanol, if it's good enough to wash coal, it's good enough to wash me. Making a joke about the poisoning of 300,000 people. It's a year later. We still don't know how many of those 300,000 people got poisoned. We know that when many of them began showing up at hospital emergency rooms, they were turned around and sent home. We know that GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, said that everybody should just hold your horses. It's January. It's flu season. A lot of them people all of a sudden showing up sick at the hospitals might just be flu. Uh-huh. We also know and understand that clip that I played for you comes from 2.5 hours into the evening's program. It was Thursday, January the 9th, 2014. Which meant it was about coming up on 8:30 Eastern time. The do not use order had gone out maybe about 3 hours previous. All those places with health permits, the businesses and the restaurants and the bars and the schools and the nursing homes and the senior centers and community centers and the churches had been serving poisonous water for something like 11 and a half hours, at least 11 and a half hours, in which 300,000 people, give or take, more or less, were consuming poison about which we still do not know the effects of exposure, ingestion, inspiration. Yeah. Because, you see, on the morning of January the 9th, 2014, when the well-meaning doofuses of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, which Joe Manchin, when he was governor, described as being there to help industry, not impede it. When they showed up for work, the phone was already ringing off the hook. And that was 8 o'clock in the morning. The phone had been ringing for a while. Some people had been complaining. Of a smell of licorice over in the neighborhood near Freedom Industries since Christmas-ish. And it took from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., 4:30 p.m., somewhere around in there, to issue an order saying, for Christ's sakes, don't drink this stuff. Oh, my God, the water's been poisoned. Gerald in the chat room pointing out, oh, hell, you could smell it driving on the other side of the river. Meaning the Kanawha River over in Kanawha City and downward. I drove through a couple of days later and you could still smell it. Somewhere between 10,000 gallons of this 4-methylcyclohexane methanol was dumped into the public water drinking supply. It took hours to tell people that there was poison in their water. It took hours to tell people not to use their water. And then they said, well, don't drink it. And then they said, well, don't drink it. Don't wash in it. Don't bathe in it. Don't do your laundry in it. Don't do nothing but flush your toilet with it. And that's where they left it. So it continued to flow through the public water system run by the corporation West Virginia American Water Company, a wholly owned subsidiary of American Water Company, a wholly owned subsidiary of another corporation, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of another corporation. Because money. Meanwhile, school cafeteria workers, exposed to the vapors of heating this stuff up trying to do dishes, wound up in the hospital, nauseated, sick, burning nostrils. Yeah. And so here we are, on the 9th day of January, 2015, and we still have no idea what exposure to this toxic chemical. I mean, we do at least know that it's toxic. A year later, we have no idea what it does to a human body. We know anecdotally that when water poisoned by 4-methylcyclohexane methanol is used to flush out the feeding tube, of a child with muscular dystrophy, we know that it causes spontaneous vomiting and diarrhea almost instantaneously. Because that was one of the things that happened. There have been no studies. There has been no funding of the studies. There will be no studies. And 300,000 human beings, from young to old and all variants in between, can only wonder, what is that stuff going to do to me? Which is a pretty grave existential question. But then your heart really, really begins to ache when you think about 300,000 people asking the question, what is that stuff going to do to my baby? What is that stuff going to do to mama? What's that stuff going to do to granddad? What's that stuff going to do to my wife, to my husband? What's that stuff going to do to my neighbor? Who's going to be responsible? Well, we can't be playing the blame game now, can we? Because, you see, when we talk about asking people to take responsibility for their actions, the governmental types and the industry types will say, you're playing the blame game. No, by God, we're not. We're paying the who's going to take care of this? Who's going to pay for this? Who's going to pay for the medical monitoring? Who's going to pay for the medical treatment? Who's going to pay for the chemotherapy, the radiation? Who's going to pay for the hospice care? That ain't the blame game. Those are questions of essential existence. Exactly, Devin. In the Kanawha Valley and the nine surrounding counties, there are 300,000 unpaid censors. There are 300,000 involuntary participants in a massive chemical human experiment. You know, there are other times in history when people have seen fit to experiment on human populations, and we tended to look unfavorably on those efforts. But seeing as how it was just hillbillies, and seeing as how even the hillbillies who are elected to protect the hillbillies don't and won't, I guess it's okay. After all, it's only hillbillies. We have this information, and in the year between then and now, it's not like nothing's been done. Next to nothing has been done. There have been hand-wringing committee meetings. There have been legislative hearings. I think for almost a month on this program, we talked about nothing but this disaster. It took 11 months, but finally, the people responsible for including Gary Southern, have been indicted by the U.S. District Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia. His lawyers for the defendants, the corporate industrial bourgeois, who poisoned 300,000 people, are now whining to the court that the U.S. attorney should be removed because, well, dang, the defendants poisoned him and his kinfolk, too. He's got to be extra super duper mad at us as well, and he shouldn't be able to prosecute us seeing how we poisoned him. That's where we stand. Well, not exactly. Because in the ensuing year, there have been some pissant, penny-ante attempts to find out just how screwed West Virginia is. And the dribs and drabs of information that have come out are pretty terrifying, really. Kelly Gillenwater is a spokeswoman for the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. And remember, now, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, is in a big state office building over on the Kanawha City, which is the south side, the Kanawha City side of the Kanawha River in Greater Charleston. Freedom Industries is what, Gerald? 10 miles away, tops? Arriving at work at 9 o'clock or so in the morning, it took 2.5 hours for inspectors from the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection to go those 10 miles and find the source of the leak when everybody who was anywhere near those goddamn tanks was pointing, going, "It's them! It's them! No, 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 don't! Over here! Warmer! Warmer! Oh, you're getting cold again! Colder! Warmer! There!" It took 2.5 hours just to get the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection on the scene. When they got to the scene, there were Freedom Industries folks there saying, "No, hell no, everything's good here. We're just having our morning coffee. No, ain't nothing to see here. Why? Licorice smell? You smell licorice? I don't smell no licorice." And then some guy comes running up behind Denny Farrell and says, "Hey, boss, the leak's sprung a leak." Denny Farrell turns around and looks at him and says, "Ixnay on the e-clay." And finally, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection guy says, "What leak?" At which point, "Oh, come on, you're going to find out sooner or later anyway." And the guy from the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection goes back and finds a geyser of this stuff, a goddamn geyser of this stuff, shooting up into the air, into a trench, and the trench is running off into the Elk River, which is 1.5 miles upstream of the intakes for the West Virginia American Water Company's water supply for 9 counties that has become a water supply for 9 counties because the coal industry has fouled the water of so many thousands of West Virginians who were, you know, using wells or had their own crummy little PSDs. They got poisoned by, yeah, right. At which point, seeing the geyser, the dude from West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection says, "Well, doggies." And thus is a disaster, thus was a disaster born. And the disaster is not over. The disaster is ongoing. Because that toxic shit is still working inside the bodies of somewhere around 300,000 human beings. Now, I realize they're just hillbillies. But still, this stuff is working in their bodies. Maybe little cells that were exposed to it are going, woo! And getting kind of crazy-like and multiplying. Maybe organs aren't quite working like organs ought to work. Anyway, West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection spokeswoman Kelly Gillenwater said that in going out, well, not really going out, the DEP has, language matters, children, the DEP has received inspection certifications. You understand the significance of a phrase like that? Received inspection certifications. That does not mean, that's not the same thing as the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection has gone out and inspected. No, they've received pieces of paper. They've received pieces of paper about 28,796 above-ground storage tanks in the state of almost level West by Coal, Virginia Stan. Mm-hmm. Inspection certifications. Because remember, the linchpin, there's that word again, the key to the inspection program over at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection is something called, and you might want to sit down, you might want to strap in, you might want to grab the hockey puck, and you might want to go a couple of revolutions around your noggin with the duct tape for this, self-reporting. I thought I'd go ahead and let a couple of moments of silence pass by just to get the screaming out of the way. Mm-hmm. Of the 28,796 tanks that were inspection for which inspection certifications were received, not inspections performed. I just want to be clear about that. About 1,100 of the tanks are going to be taken out of service. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Gerald has for us the answer to what does self-certification mean. Gerald notes, if they run it like the water monitoring at coal mine sites, you already have your answer. Because also here in 2014, though the rest of the nation really didn't pay much attention to it, it turned out that a couple of laboratories, wait a minute, laboratories. It turned out that a couple of laboratories, at least one, who do work for coal companies by way of certifying that they're not poisoning and toxifying the water over at their giant toxic moonscape mountaintop removal sites and their deadly toxic gassy holes in the ground, it turned out that at least one company was dummying up the data. Filthy water in, clean water reports out. That's called self-reporting, self-monitoring. So Gerald's absolutely right. If they run it like the water monitoring at coal mine sites, you already have your answer. Karen Ireland said in this story from WOWK-TV, I'm not sure how close they are to water sources, and I don't know what was stored in the tanks, but it definitely shows a need for common sense regulation to protect our groundwater rivers and streams. Karen Ireland is an activist who is hollering for more regulatory structure, shall we say. So, under the law that was passed by the legislature and signed by GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, owners of tanks have to register and inspect tanks that hold at least 1,320 gallons of liquid if those tanks are 90% above ground and sit in a fixed location for at least 60 days. More than 50,000 pieces of paper have flowed into the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, saying, yep, we got a tank. We like our tank. Our tank's fine. Go away. At which point the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, said, okay, we'll go away. Hell, we didn't leave the office in the first place. We're happy to have the piece of paper. We're sorry for putting you out. We sure hope it didn't take too much time and energy and that our job-killing regulations didn't kill any jobs. Now, they've had several months to get this done, and Ms. Gillenwater over to the West Virginia DEP, she said only 28,796 tanks complied, but for owners who might not have had time to get their tanks inspected, we'll work with you here at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protecting. We'll work with you. Mm-hmm. So there's 1,100 tanks a year after 300,000 people were poisoned. There's 1,100 tanks that aren't fit for usage that are arguably probably still in use. Now, bear in mind, the tank in question, the one that dumped 10,000 gallons of an unknown deadly, we finally figured out what it was, and there was more than 4-methylcyclohexane methanol in the mix, but we really didn't know what it did. There's all kinds of chemicals all over the place like that. Not just in West Virginia, but, well, God knows, it's probably in Texas. I mean, who knew that a fertilizer factory was going to blow up an entire little town in Texas? We certainly wouldn't want to be inspecting any of that because, well, that might offend the God of Commerce. So there we are. Maybe I should have spent the first 43 minutes of this program talking about something else. Maybe I should have spent the first 43 minutes of this program talking about what's happening in France. Maybe I should have spent some portion of the first 43 minutes of this program talking about the ongoing manhunt for the white, middle-aged, balding, white guy, I mentioned white, driving a white pickup truck, who it is believed is responsible for attempting to pipe bomb an NAACP chapter. Maybe I should have done that. But I have a pretty good sense for what other people talk about. And I'm pretty sure that nobody this evening is going to spend 43 minutes talking about the fate, the unknown fate of 300,000 poisoned hillbillies. Because that's just not done. Forget about it, Jake. it's hillbillies. Right? And really, beyond what I've said here, how much more is there to say? The hillbillies are already poisoned. And we're just going to, and we're not going to go and try to find, because, you know, it might induce a panic if we were to say, listen, consumption of 4-methylcyclohexane methanol is probably cancer causing. And then again, somebody might want, all those people who ingested the shit might want somebody to pay for their treatment. And that's not good for America, because it's not good for business. Yeah. And if you, if for people who were inside, people who were inside that 9-county area who were poisoned, I can't begin I wasn't. You know, I'm just subject to the ordinary everyday poisons of living in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone that everybody's in. Yeah. But I can't imagine. How do you put that aside? How do you not wake up every morning wondering, is this the day? Or when's it going to happen? Or who's it going to happen to? I guess if there's a postscript to be added to all of this marking of an anniversary, it is that in the days and weeks following the poisoning of 300,000 people, not even 1,000 human beings gathered at the West Virginia State Capitol or outside the West Virginia Governor's Mansion or outside the West Virginia Department of Environmental Polluting or Permitting or Protection. Not even 1,000 people. When, given the fact that 300,000 people were poisoned, and given what that means relative to mothers, dads, grandfathers, grandmothers, cousins, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, neighbors, friends, family, congregation, church members, what have you, you would think that maybe one person might have gone and stood in the cold in the name of 10 others. Had that been the case, 30,000 people would have been around the state capitol in Charleston. They were never there. They're never going to be there. Because this is a state that is complacent about its own demise. This is a state that has worn chains for so long that we kind of like the weight of them. This is a state where people proudly display decals on the back of their pickup truck windows showing some poor human being wallowing on his miserable belly to get at a seam of coal. This is a state where women put stickers on their cars, decals, that say, I'm a proud coal miner's wife. never thinking that a few years from now, she may be sitting in a hospital room watching her husband gasp for his last breath, or sitting in a neonatal intensive care unit watching her grandbaby gasp for its first. There were no 3,000. There was no 30,000. God knows there weren't 300. You know why there weren't 300? This ain't Sparta. So we're quietly going about the business of saying, hit us again and put a little stank on it this time. I am just a little itsy-bitsy ray of sunshine tonight, aren't I? Why don't you leave, Bob? Yeah, why don't I? Where's that extra acre? Anybody out there donating an acre of ground in an 80-year-old falling down house? Why don't you leave, Bob? Because there ain't nowhere to go. Because everywhere is under assault. It just seems that it just happens that it's done a little more openly and with a little more callous disregard here in Appalachistan. But you're under assault in Louisiana, Jim. You're under assault in Texas, Dr. Allen and Betsy and Texas T and Rick Goodner and everybody else, Beth, Edward. You're under assault in Wisconsin. You're under assault in Michigan. You're under assault in Kansas, Diane. You're under assault in Montana, Kate. And you're under assault in California, Sparky. And Tim. And Greg. David. Sandra. You're under assault in Ohio, Isaac. Bill. There's nowhere in this country you're not under assault. Because money. You're under assault in Kentucky. I don't have to tell you that, Dwayne. You're under assault in Indiana. I don't have to tell you that, Gerard. And yeah, Carol Baker, you're under assault in Hooterville. You know that probably better than I do. You're under assault in Arkansas, Haley. You're under assault in Tennessee, Granny T. Nobody, nowhere's safe. Because money. Because jobs. And the only hope, and I mean the only hope, is grassroots action. The Sierra Club's not going to save your ass. Neither's Greenpeace. World Wildlife Fund isn't going to save you. You are responsible for your own salvation. And not necessarily that, but that of your loved ones. And here's the cool thing. If you get up out of your seat and onto your feet and out into the street, you just might be surprised to find that others will follow you. Before we start Friday on the front porch, I just saw a call come in to the phone line. Before we go to Friday on the front porch, let's check in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, you just sparked me to call you, and I apologize for jumping in a little bit before your magic time, but I wanted to agree with you on a big portion of it. You know, you can't get people to show up to protest about people dying and poisoning and all that good stuff, and yet I just drove by 3 Walmarts, and the parking lots are full. And them damn things, you can get 500-600 cars into a parking lot.
Well, hell yeah. Easily.
It's an amazing thing. You know, there was an old man that used to live down the street from me. And I used to hang out with his boy, and we used to be friends. And it was a fun thing to sit on the front porch on his little suburban tract house. And he would talk about the old days. You know, when you talk to an old guy and you can just hear that ring of truth and that little shiver goes up your back.
Yep.
That just tells you, wow, this is the real stuff. And he'd talk about, fighting for worker rights and stuff like that. And he'd take his hat off and bow his head a little bit and show the scar where the thug whacked him in the head with a billy club back in the day when he was trying to get wages raised at the car plant he was working at. And like I said, your little monologue about the apathy of people has become, I mean, it's like I see it everywhere. People don't care anymore, it seems. Or if they do care, they're so used to, oh, I'm going to respond to that. Let me get on and sign the online petition.
Hey, look, I've done it. I signed an online petition. Look, I've done something.
Exactly. But to do something that actually has some meat behind it, that might actually inconvenience you or to maybe take a couple bucks out of your pocket, nah, no. That takes away from me. And this reminds me of a conversation I had. You know, this is that Trucker John guy that occasionally calls you.
Oh, no. I recognize your voice, John.
And, unfortunately, I made myself very unwelcome at a truck stop earlier, this week. Not that they kicked me out or anything, but, the drivers that were sitting there, oh, this guy come up and this was, I've heard of him. I have seen their tracks in the woods and occasionally their spore on the ground, but I never ran across an actual living, breathing, Ayn Rand convert in the flesh.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You found one in the wild?
I found one in the wild with all the fur and the heels and the bangs and the whole nine yards. And I swear to you, Bob Kincaid, this person was a devotee.
Oh, dear. Sounds like you may have found Alan Greenspan.
Oh, no. This was a young black fella. And what was really fun about it is that some of this I got after he left, because apparently he's known to some of the people in the truck stop. He's an odd combination, extremely Ayn Randian, but he's also gay and believes in, you know, and I guess in some ways that can dovetail together. But the point of our conversation was the with economics and what have you. That's what, kind of what we get into. And this fellow sat here, and I'll give you just one quote, because I was using the example of my family. A lot of my family's in southwestern Virginia, down around Parisburg. And
know exactly where you're talking about.
And there, and so, and of course, in my age group, most of my family is pretty much, you know, in the 40s and 50s and stuff. But a lot of their kids are having to move away because there are no jobs in that area at all. And I was making the comment that, of course, not that is not possible for all of them. They're sitting on the inherited land, or they have strong roots in the area. And I made the comment with the guy because he was talking about, you know, these people just need to go out and get jobs, man. Just go out and get a damn job. And I would say to him, well, what if there isn't a job in the area they're living in? And he says, there's no law that says they have to stay there.
You're kidding.
And I'm like, that's exactly what he said. I finally
so,
had to
so,
find out.
So what? Now, just hold on a minute, John. So this anarcho-Randian says that people are just supposed to load up the truck and head for Beverly Hills, that is, right? But Jed and Granny and Jethro and Ellie were already rich when they left Hooterville.
Yeah, but, I flat out asked him. I said, well, what about their heritage? He says, heritage don't put money on the table. And I, by this point, we have 10 people all looking at this guy. And I mean, we're talking some pretty hardcore, redneck truck driver, hat, cowboy hat wearing Texan kind of folk. And even some of them, their eyes were bugging out. Because this guy flat out, he was like, look, it's not my job to take care of you. And I said, he goes, we don't need to be going down no socialist path. I said, and of course I tossed out my famous, so I guess you don't believe in insurance then. What do you mean? I said, you have health insurance? Well, yeah. I said, welcome to socialism. And he was like, laughter ensued all around. But I was thinking about that when you were talking, and I said, you might get a kick out of that.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing if you've got the stomach for it to have just enough of a conversation with a libertarian to find out that they don't live in the same universe with us. It's one of those miracles of physics that study that was released earlier this week was kind of pointing to, that there are points where alternate universes overlap with our own or something. And they don't have any shimmer or sparkle about them, but they're definitely not living in the same universe because I don't know, they're just going to go down into the basement and get Grandpa's bag of libertarian gold out. And because they're not talking about the Clampets leaving for Beverly Hills, they're talking about Grapes of Wrath Jode stuff. And anybody who's ever read The Grapes of Wrath knows how that plays.
And I sit there, and he was complaining about Obamacare. And he goes,
oh, Jesus.
It's not the job of the government to be taking care of me. I'm supposed to take care of myself, and you're supposed to take care of yourself. And the whole idea is, I have the right to swing my, and he did the old Randian thing, the famous one. I have the right to swing my fist as much as I want until I hit you. And I said, yeah, and then it's too late. And he got this look on his face like, whoa, whoa.
Well, but see, even, yeah. but John, even that argument that, it's not government's place to take care of you, even that argument is, you get to look at him and say, that's interesting, because the governments of most of the developed world seem to think that it is. What is it that makes you an outlier? Why do you hate your fellow man? Because remember, Randianism centered or grounded on this bullshit snake oil philosophy of objectivism. And objectivism is another way of saying igum foo. I got mine, F you.
That's basically it.
I have to ask, John. At any point in time, did you happen to remind this strange person that Ayn Rand finished off her life being a suck on the government teat via Medicare and Social Security?
That time the conversation had somewhat degenerated because I'm unfortunately a bit combative. I bearded him in his den a little bit there, and he made the mistake of, you know, cause, you know, he's a truck driver like I am. And I said, so I asked him about the hours, if you remember the conversation we had a week or so ago about the hours of service you asked about.
Right.
And I go, so what do you think about the hours of service? Well, I'm glad that you changed it. I said, well, if you're a true Ayn Rand libertarian, you should be able to drive as many hours as you want, right? Well, yeah. I said, well, how many hours are you going to drive today? Well, I ain't going to drive that much. I said, well, you're going to get fired then, right? What do you mean? I said, well, if the company is allowed to run you as hard as they want, then would you do it? No, I could change jobs. I always have the right to change a job if I don't like the working conditions. If it's the wages aren't right, or I always have the right to go to another job. And I said, now we've just rotated back to the very beginning of our conversation. You assume, you say that you have the right to go find another job, but depending on how you do the counting, you've got a real-time unemployment rate running 12-13%. Where are you going to get this job? He talks about, it's all part of the negotiation. I said, the key to negotiation is power. I sit at the table with you, and we negotiate. That negotiation is fair as long as you and I have at least some degree of parity in power. But if I'm sitting in front of a freaking king with an army in his back, and I'm a little peasant, barely scratching a rock for a living, there's no negotiating.
Nope.
And he couldn't get that through his head. He was under the assumption that somehow he had the right. And I said, you don't have any right. Your libertarian
he just assumes that capital is going to sit there in angelic bliss and pretend that it doesn't have all the cards. That he's gonna throw down the three of clubs and say I win, and the guy with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 jack, queen, king, ace of clubs is going, well, I'll be damned, you do.
Yeah, and you kind of wrapped it up in there in that statement. They live in a little fantasy world that says, you know, they want, you know, as one talk show host called it, they want to be able to smoke drugs and get laid and do whatever they want to do, but they don't want you to be able to do what you want to do.
Right. Because anytime you find somebody saying that they want to be free to do whatever they want to do, It is part and parcel of that argument that they reserve the right to define what you do. So
exactly.
Since they don't want government health care, it means you can't have government-sponsored health care.
Exactly. And we ended up, but part of the conversation ended up, I said, I brought up the old Spearham laws. Back in the and that was a dangerous thing because now you're talking actual edumacation, which I don't have much of, but I do read a lot. And he goes, well, what's that? And I said, well, that's about the first major time that people took things that were supposed to be in commons and started parceling it up like pieces of pie to be bought and sold. And that's what generally meant that most people lost whatever little chances of land they had and were forced to run to the cities to go work in the new factories with crap wages and crap environment. And this kind of rolls back to the conversation you were talking about earlier. You know, you have a corporation that poisoned a boatload of people, and I'm being polite about it. And then, I mean, the news was barely 24, 36, 48 hours old. And, we're going to have to file for bankruptcy. And so, boom.
Yeah.
Suddenly, everything, their responsibility is now in the hands of some receivership, and, you know, they talk about, well, we got this guy, we're gonna indict him for all this fraud and stuff. We're gonna spend millions of dollars indicting this guy, and even if he's convicted, he's club fed.
Right. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh yeah, I mean, because he's gonna say, you know, I'm the CEO, I was the president of the company, I was the CEO of the company, but I didn't know what was going on. I didn't go and, you know, check these things out personally. I just took the reports from the people down below me, blah, 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 blah. And then, but I didn't know. But he cashed the freaking check that came with it.
And you know what? I think if you cash the check, you know. I think cashing the check creates chargeable knowledge, don't you think?
You would think in freaking common sense, but no, not the way, you know, what was it, Henry VIII or Henry III? Oh my God, Shakespeare said, when the revolution comes, first kill the lawyers, although I'm bastardizing it real, real bad, but the sentiment is there. I mean, you know, you've got an entire class of people that get elected to office, and if you go to Congress right now and you peel back the layer and look at not just the fact that they're congressmen or senators, but you look at what their former professions are, and you're talking 75-80% of them are lawyers.
And the part I don't understand is the number of Republican physicians. Because I think, in a way, I think that's even more dangerous. Because you'll hear these people say things like, well, you know what? I don't think we need so many laws in America. I think any ordinary citizen ought to be able to look and read the law and understand them. And that's a great utopian vision, but they never say that about physicians. I think anybody ought to be able to take a scalpel and open up a human being and understand what's going on. It takes years of training. I mean, I don't go down to my mechanic and say, I think anybody should be able to look under the hood of a car and understand what's wrong.
The days of peeling back an AMC Gremlin and changing the starter for yourself is long gone.
Well, you open the hood of most cars and they got these plastic housings on top of the engines. It's like the companies are ashamed to have you see an engine anymore.
Well, not just that, but they want you to have special tools and lips, and they want you to take it to a mechanic to fix it because, you know, that's the after service part of capitalism.
I don't think, John, that we should be surprised to see that there are lawyers in government, because this government was built by lawyers. Adams was a lawyer.
Well, yeah.
Jefferson was a lawyer.
No doubt about that at all. No doubt about that at all. Well, the part that I have the problem with is that, you know, if I had magic control of the world, I wouldn't mind seeing a few more plumbers and a few housewives and a garbage collector here and there, just somebody that actually, you know, lives in the real world.
Yeah, it takes a lot of people to make up a great society. There's no doubt about that. I know Dr. Bill has referenced the fact that he sees a lot of students coming through who are going to be wealth management counselors. And what Dr. Bill says, you know, what that kid's telling me is that person's not going to do anything. They're not going to make anything. They're just going to tell people how to move money around. And there's value in that. We need CPAs because we have a tax code.
Yeah, but did you see the articles that are written today about the Congress is trying to do a second run at that delay of the Dodd-Frank investment bill?
Oh yeah.
And when I read this particular line in the article, I thank the gods I was actually parked at the time, because I think I would have, you know, if I had been actually on the road or walking or chewing gum, I would have either choked, died, stripped, or fallen on my face. Because the primary sponsor, of course, is J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup.
Naturally.
Now, these are people who, on their TV commercials, say that one of the reasons you should invest your money with us is because we know the marketplace and we can maneuver quickly and we can, you know, take advantage of opportunities and we're right there in the marketplace, blah, 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 and I'm paraphrasing the hell out of it. But the rationale that was put forth as to why they need to put a delay on this was because they've already had 5 years to prepare for this new transition. But they need another couple of years because it's so difficult to figure out how they're going to do it. And when I read that, and then I just remember watching over the weekend a commercial from one of these investment groups that's, you know, we're specialists at taking advantage of market opportunities and moving rapidly to do. And I'm going, and these are the same sons of bitches that want to now have a 2-year delay. And I read an article that scares the heck out of me, because I'm thinking that one of the reasons why they pushed so hard to get this thing passed during the Cromwell's bill is because they actually think that they're about to go collapse, and they needed to have that federal bailout to keep from going under.
Well, there is no shortage of people who are expecting a lot of bubbles to go pop just any time now, and frankly, let's remember, when the bubble goes pop, everybody doesn't go broke, John.
Oh no, they don't.
And
recession is great for rich people.
Yeah, and if things go belly up, there will be people who make a killing. It'll be the people who were forced into the gambling den who will take the hit. The people running the gambling den, you know, go bet on a football game. Look at the line on a football game. Odds makers are constantly working to get the money right on both sides of the bet. Mm-hmm. Because the house always wins.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I'm sitting across from a casino right now that 15 years ago, when I first started driving, was in a tent. It's one of those Indian casinos. Mm-hmm. I won't bother saying where, but when I first passed by this place, it was in one of those big composite fiber tents and a small building in the front of it. Now I'm looking at a 15-story, 20-story hotel, convention center complex, all kinds of fancy lights, and I'm going, one nickel at a time.
Yep.
It's all the money. But anyway,
anybody can get rich. All you have to do is push the button.
Yep. But it won't be you. It's like that one Highlander the actual Highlander that actually made sense, not the second one, but the third one after that, when the old illusionist had his head chopped off, he said, "There can only be one, but it won't be you."
John, it's awful good to hear from you. Stay safe, drive careful, and wherever you are, I hope you're warm.
I'm fat. I'm always warm.
There's a lot to be said for that insulative layer.
That's right. Just don't get it wet.
There you go.
Otherwise, I'll be just like the Mogwais. I'll just start breeding. Have a good night, then.
You take care, John. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy John calling from somewhere out upon the road. So here we are. It is Friday on the front porch. It's 19 minutes past the hour, and I want to send out thanks to Glenn. Glenn got us started this evening. We went from being $215 down to only $165 away from finishing the week to the good. Thank you very kindly, Glenn, and hopefully other folks will jump in alongside you. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh, based upon my discussion of, well, my at least commemoration of the year's anniversary of the Freedom disaster. Ron says, as I see it, you have a choice between the job-killing regulations of the EPA or the people-killing non-regulation of corporations. Freedom of choice here in the greatest country on earth. Can you say, asks Ron, Bhopal? Yeah, We can. I can. I suspect many of us can. So let's fire up the Friday on the Front Porch Horn Malloy Skype chat group. If you'd like to jump in, you are welcome to send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk, on Skype, and you will be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. This is listener-supported conversation radio, Friday on the Front Porch conversation coming your way. Thanks for the bumper, Ron. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Day is long and the night is yours alone. When you're sure you've had enough of this life, yourself go. Cause everybody cries, everybody hurts sometimes. Sometimes everything is wrong.
Well, folks either love or hate that song, but R.E.M., Everybody Hurts. 26 minutes past the hour. We're about halfway through the program this evening. This is the Horn Friday on the Front Porch. And we've got the Friday on the Front Porch group all fired up and ready to go. Again, you can join in by sending a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, on Skype. And I want to thank Kelly for helping out today. That means we are down to $115 to go in this evening's fundraising to come even with the end of the week. Because I've had a habit of, I get focused on one thing. Hey, Bill, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right. So I wanted to make sure that I acknowledge you up and early in the process. You're well and warm,
yeah,
I hope.
Before I pass out, yeah.
Before you pass out.
Well, yeah, I'm drinking coffee with Kahlua in it, so.
Hoo-wee.
You go sideways that way.
Well, you can, although, I don't know, those liqueurs kind of scare me because all that sugar is a guaranteed Jim Dandy first-class hangover.
Yeah, there's also these, I don't know where these cigarettes came from. They don't have a name on them.
Oh, not exactly Lucy's, are they?
Well, I know, angry with this one. To me, the use of tobacco was the Native Americans' revenge, you know.
When the dumb white Europeans arrived, the natives were using tobacco ceremonially.
Yeah.
For sacred purposes, and in some cases, not even incinerating it. And the dumb white European folks went, I kind of enjoy smoking this stuff. And in point of fact, one of the old English terms for tobacco, Bill, was sotweed.
Oh, Jesus.
Because people would become besotted with it.
Well, there were so many things around that, what was the thing that John Bell Hood was drinking and a lot of other people were drinking in the 1850s?
Oh, laudanum?
Laudanum, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Hamlet wrote about one of the people in his books, the book Red Harvest, had. Well, he was tuberculosis, as Hammett referred to him. He was a lunger. That's another piece of English compassion for another human being. And he drank laudanum.
Laudanum was an alcohol-based tincture of opium.
Yeah.
And it was quite popular among the people who built the fledgling United States. Because to that extent, you know, it was an unregulated libertarian paradise, so people were free to go and get themselves an opium Jones whenever and wherever and however. Yay, freedom, right?
Yeah, but how come you can't do that with the green stuff? How come?
Because big pharma, because money, right? So stand by, Bill, and we'll bring the rest of the Horn Front Porch Gang on.
Folks had to keep the hell out of me, Bob, so go ahead.
All right. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh, based on John's call previously. Subject line, say what? Ron noting, a black gay objectivist? Son of a bitch, now I've heard everything. Where's a good deprogrammer when you need one? I don't know if you can deprogram that kind of stuff. Hey, Sparky, how are you this evening?
I'm just fine, Bob. I got a moment for Gerald. Gerald likes to tell me to shut it.
Yeah.
Well, it was 63 degrees today. I was working out in the yard.
Uh-huh.
And I got my first tilling done on the garden.
Oh, that's just mean. That's just mean. It's 23 here at the mansion. We're on our way down to, oh, my God, 7. 7. We're on our way down to 7 this evening. Mm-hmm. If there's not too much wind, it might be tolerable. Yeah, rub it in, why don't you? And thank you, Gerald. Thank you for kicking in this evening. We are now only $95 away from the evening's fundraising goal. That is much appreciated. So let's see, who all do we have this evening? Good evening, Carol Abel.
Hi, Bob. Hi, family. How are you doing?
Dandy. How's Australia this evening?
It's very pleasant.
It always is, isn't it?
No. No, it's really quite unpleasant a lot, but I've been trying not to cry.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Yeah, because you've got summer coming on, of course.
I've just been listening to the suffering that's going on in West Virginia and reading about the expansion of death coming out of Fukushima. 100,000 birds on the West Coast have died in the last 3 months.
Odd that isn't showing up in the for-profit media, right?
No, it doesn't show up anywhere unless you hunt for it. It's been banned from our minds, I guess. It's just so sad to see psychopathy taking over everything and poisoning people from above and below.
Because money, right?
I don't know if it's even money. It's, to a psychopath, the only thing that matters is winning. Winning. That's the operative word, and it can look like money and power, but it can also just look like the Schadenfreude people like that feel when they see other people suffer. They just don't have any response to it at all. It's like it doesn't register. They lack empathy to such a degree that they can't feel the suffering of other people. And so they just let it go on.
Oh, geez.
So I'm listening to what's going on there, and I see it as a global problem as well. And I'm so sorry for the people of West Virginia that are still going through this.
Well, as Devin pointed out, and I don't know if he's going to be in the group later, Carol, but as Devin pointed out to me privately a little bit ago, there are still people in the Kanawha Valley who are using bottled water.
I would be one of them. I'd be afraid to drink anything coming out of the tap, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I was getting at. The questions have still not been answered. What about the entire water system itself, which is kind of a patchwork anyway? Gerald knows this. There's old iron pipes. There's more modern piping. But whatever conduits there are, every last inch of it had this deadly toxic poison going through it. And there is no talk whatsoever of replacing the whole system. Because, of course, that would cost money, and who wants to waste money on hillbillies? I mean, we've been throwing money at hillbillies for ever since Lyndon Johnson, and it doesn't seem to be doing any good now, does it?
It did for a while.
Yeah, it did. Very few people know that the first official government food stamp recipients was a coal miner in his family in Appalachia.
That's Bob, fine. They just want to throw whole segments of the population under the bus. They don't care. They don't ever fix up what they mess up. There's no solution for Fukushima either, and they're just messing around looking like they're doing something just to keep people placated. And they're doing the same thing in pockets all over our country. You know about the disaster in New Mexico with the WIP, you know, the underground storage thing. That's still leaking, and Hanford is still, you know, polluting. And they just never address any of the issues when they craft things up. They just keep moving on to the next thing.
Exactly, exactly.
It's kind of like being stuck at the age of about 7 or 8 forever and ever. You know, they never grow up. They never take responsibility. And they are so utterly selfish that They don't even care if it happens to their own families.
Yeah,
they don't care.
Peter Pan writ toxically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, let's check in with the rest of the group. Good evening, Sandra.
Hey, can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
All right. Yeah. No. Hope all is well. I'm just thinking about, you know, ethnocentricity, and 2,000 people were slaughtered in Nigeria, but all we hear is Charlie, whatever the fuck. I mean, I it's just interesting to sort of watch. Also in Yemen, you had like 40 people blown up, you know. And we have the NAACP would-be bomb that, you know, thankfully didn't blow up, but hello, what the hell? So it's just interesting to see what, you know, the elites are freaking out about, which is whatever's going on in Paris. And mind you, those people didn't deserve to be murdered because of their horrible satire, but yikes. After looking through what they were putting out, I'm like, yo, shit.
Yeah, I actually had the Nigeria story in the stack this evening because it is there are over 2,000 estimated dead in the destruction of 16 Nigerian villages or 16 villages in the Baga City, Nigeria.
Yeah, and you know, the people who were murdered, you know, are the women, children, people who couldn't get away. I mean, I'm sorry. So once again, we find out that some lives are more valuable than others.
And more notable, more noteworthy, I guess. And you mentioned what happened in Yemen. Eight dead in a blast in Baghdad. Eight dead in a blast in Baghdad ever since George Bush decided to set the entire Middle East on fire. That's just, you know, that's just Friday.
Yeah, and the thing is, the idea that we, the nerve, the absolute gall of this fucking Jeb, you know, I'm just like, I can't even believe the state of our country where this motherfucker thinks he can, you know, run for president. I'm just, that has really set me back. I'm like, what? You know, how dare you? Listen to your mother.
But oh dear God, don't mention her, Sandra.
Well, no, she said we've had enough Bushes. She said it. I'm just co-signing. I agree.
And having co-signed with Mother Bush, she'll take your bleach shower later, right?
Well, my beautiful mind, she's had a few. And not only that, I'll give her one more. When she said to them people in I don't know what stadium they were in. Were,
Astrodome,
you know,
Houston.
Better off. Everyone was all, oh, how could she? But did them motherfuckers go back to New Orleans? No, they didn't. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. And, well, go back to where? I mean, have the condos started rising in the lower Ninth Ward yet?
That's what I'm saying. Why would you go back to the lower, you know, it's just, I mean, I understand. You know, that whole thing is insulting, but what was insulting was the life that people were subjected to a huge swath of New Orleans. Now, the people who are there are living in a neoliberal wonderland.
Yeah, of charter schools and, Bobby Jindal's do-it-yourself exorcisms and, it's a horror. What a damn pity into the bargain. But you're right, and because I keep going back to this, because I at least wanted to make sure that I mentioned it, every NAACP chapter in the United States is on high alert right now.
Well,
I read earlier in the day.
I haven't seen any white people or Huckabee stepping up and apologizing for these Christians, you know, like, every other Muslim had to, like Mike Brown and Garner family had to, you know, who killed the police in Pennsylvania. Where's the, I don't give a fuck about them.
No. And I don't know who Patrick Lynch thinks he is, but if he thinks that he and his brothers and sisters are anything more than tools in a larger machine, I guess the Irish whiskey must be flowing.
Well, no, but you know, I mean, that's a severe case of you need to understand that the oppression works both ways, because these police, they're going to learn a hard lesson, because keep work stopping and watch the layoffs start. I mean, they're trying to prop up this whole broken window stuff, but in the meanwhile, black and brown people are getting a little taste of, you know, some white privilege up in here. They ain't being bothered every other day, every other minute.
And oddly enough, New York is not going to hell in a handbasket.
Exactly. No, that's the thing. And that's what's really interesting. It's like the crime rate is going down. Thank you for taking the lead out the gasoline. It's staying down. What we're seeing now is, oh, you were just preying on communities of color, extracting money from community of color, harassing people of color. So thank you.
Exactly, because dare I say that we're finding out that in many instances the police are the problem.
Yeah.
And just for you and the rest of the group, has everybody the slaughter of Tamir Rice?
That, you know what? That is not, you know, the whole idea. Someone had the nerve to say training. You can't train humanity. You can't train that. Those people are fucking fucked. They had enough training in a world to solve that problem there. Those are horrible individuals who should not be in law enforcement, should not be anywhere near authority at all. So that was, unbelievable.
It's,
anyway, I'll let
I mean, just the visual for people who haven't seen it. There's the family had to sue to get it, because the old elder sister of Tamir Rice said they tackled me, they assaulted me, and lo and behold, when they finally got the video footage, because it was shot on a government camera, mind you, so it had to be turned over. There's Tamir Rice's sister running to her shot down 12-year-old baby brother, and police, at least two of them, come and tackle a 14-year-old girl.
She's 14. Remember, once again, we need to remind people that, you know, all these victims are being aged by 5, 6, 7 years. She's 14. Her brother was 12.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a question. Are any of them Iraq, Afghanistan vets? The cop, I didn't follow that part.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, because remember a lot of the people who were in the Guard and Reserves who were called up under things like stop. Remember, during the Iraq War, we had to use just about everybody who owned a uniform. And a whole bunch of those people in the reserves and the guard were cops. And they're the ones that we sent over poorly trained, poorly equipped, and said, defend freedom. Oh, by the way, a note coming in from Carol Baker. She says, that's going to be my new catchphrase. Thanks, Sandra. Those people are fucking fucked. And she's, you know, she's not being smart aleck. It's the truth. How do you unfuck? Because I don't have an answer. Meanwhile, quick trip to the email box. Subject line: objectivism. Coming from Michael in Madison. Isn't the term objectivism even more pernicious, more dangerous, more of a con than your garden variety igumfoo? Randian objectivism, as I understand it, is, I'm not sure quite how to express this, is such bullshit because it starts with the premise, if you can even call it that, that reality exists independent of consciousness, blah, 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 inductive logic, and all that Vulcan-esque crap, which is all well and good and makes sense in a no-shit Sherlock kind of way, but then it makes this bullshit gigantic leap, like over the shark on jet skis with streamers and everything, that somehow laissez-faire anarcho-Randian selfishness and greed is the only objective, please pronounce those air quotes as snooty as possible, think William F. Buckley Jr., objective economic and moral conclusion. As a philosophical system, again, I don't even know that it merits being labeled as such, it's got to be the biggest scam of the 20th century. It's no different than any of the scammiest of religious scams in human history. I mean, Rand's House of Cards is built on the foundation that this philosophy is the objective one, the true and logical one. It's marketing. It's an empty slogan. Anyone who's ever been part of a community and anyone who's ever done a selfless, compassionate act and seen it pay dividends, so to speak, knows that there's nothing objective about Rand's objectivism. It's an abuse of the word. It's like calling your pet philosophy logicalism or truthism or the word of God. Sorry to rant, Michael says, but that objectivism labeling just makes my blood boil, and it seemed like you kind of blew right past it. Not a criticism. I'd just like to hear your thoughts. And for that matter, the thoughts of the larger group. Because that's what we're in the grips of. I don't understand how. Here's a question. Why did Ayn Rand even need Social Security or Medicare? The woman had written books that had been published in their millions. Was she abused by some objectivist publisher who took all the profits and left her with beans?
Listen, if I can, that's a really good segue to something fairly smutty I would like to bring up.
Oh, yes?
Steve Croft.
Oh, I couldn't resist tweeting that to you the other night.
Well, you're talking about Ayn Rand, and she had a sort of affinity with ass play. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
And so Steve Croft, with his champagne, he has destroyed champagne for me, all right? Won't be drinking it anytime soon because...
I'm glad I'm not the only one that got there.
Champagne, straws, pink and brown. Listen, way out there. And then when I saw it was a sister, oh, I was like, you did not. Why?
Yeah, and so the background on this, Steve...
Okay, yeah, you might want to...
Steve Croft, professional member of the for-profit media, serious video journalist, it turns out, and this is salacious, I admit it, and everybody's got feet of clay, and for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, but it appears that Steve Croft came short several times. That was good. I got it. Come on. Tough crowd.
Oh, my God. You know, short. Yeah.
So Steve Croft, millionaire, can't resist stepping out on his traditional family values marriage and begins an affair with a much younger woman of color. And not only did he do that, it turns out, and this is all confirmed, this isn't speculation. Not only did he do that, he sent lots and lots of texts to her telling her things like his favorite colors were pink and brown, and at one point poured champagne and drank it out of her ass?
Yeah, crat ass? I mean, I'm like trying to figure out the containment issues there, but
right. I mean, it's not like there's a gold mine sluice running down her spine or something.
Oh my God! But no, that article had like so much detail. I'm like, damn. It was really like you couldn't unread it. You read it, and it's like, damn.
Yeah, I'm done with champagne for a while too. I mean, I don't even know if I can go. What is it, Prosecco or? Asti Spumati. I don't know.
No, I mean, it was just too much. And the nerve, you know, just the nerve that he was cheap, too. He wouldn't even cough up for all the, you know, she was complaining that he was so cheap. I'm like, damn, girl.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. It just got a hell of a lot worse, Sandra. Just got a communique in from Carol Baker. So he tossed her salad with champagne dressing? Ew!
The tossed salad man. Out of jail. God.
Oh. And why, of course, when I read that story, did I think that somewhere in the near future there's going to be a special sit-down interview between Steve Croft and Kobe Bryant?
Oh, yeah, that's my thing. That's my thing. Yes! That's awesome, Bob.
We're so shallow, Sandra.
Oh, no, it is shallow beyond belief, but it's hard to keep it up, though, because, you know, shit is so deep. But, no, you left a perfect segue there, so I had to get some of that ass play in there.
and you know, you come wandering into the conversation, Sandra, and you start trouble. This from Ron and Raleigh. Whoa! Hey, Bob, I didn't know it was that kind of party. Felch me daddy ate to the bar. Oh, God. It's going to be one of those nights.
Oh, no. You know I'm completely pornographic. I am, and it's outrageous because I work for Now, but I'm just like, I don't, you know I don't care.
I know. And by the way, fan mail already rolling in, subject line, Sandra, exclamation point. I'm a big fan of Sandra. I'm thrilled to hear her insights tonight, signed Diane in Kansas Stan, who in her own right is marvelously coherent.
Oh, hello, Diane.
Well, as a former lady of the evening.
Woo, boy, here we go.
Wait, what?
I don't have to say a word, do I? Oh, I made a big confession. Oops, don't tell anyone.
Oh, Alex, you can't just walk in and say stuff like that. I mean, that's just, you know, that's tossing the salacious grenade in the middle of the dance floor.
That's what I was born to do.
Oh, we're gonna have a magical little evening. Let's see who. Hey, Gerald, how are you?
Hey, Bob, I'm here.
Yes, you are. And
I'm just sitting here drinking my fit for use water from West Virginia American Water Company.
Oh, did all of that send you right over to the tap for a cool bubbling glass?
Fit for use.
Fit for use.
Remember that? Yep. I don't want to get back on that.
Oh, it's okay. I remember.
Is the water safe? I can't remember how many times that was asked. Is the water safe? It's fit for use.
I remember when Gert, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, said, when they said, well, Governor, are you going to drink it? And he said, well, I think that for everybody, that winds up just being a really personal decision.
Which is translation for hell no.
No, mine's being flown in, baby. We got bathtubs full of the stuff.
Yeah, personal decision, whether you want to get sick or not.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I can't remember. Someone had mentioned about there were a lot of people around that still were using bottled water. I can't remember who said that.
Oh, that was Devin.
Yeah, okay, Devin. Yeah, you know, actually my mother is doing that. She's actually hauling water from Grafton every week because she goes up to see her friends and brings water back.
She just started baiting it. This is going to sound silly, but what does she bring it back in, Gerald?
Oh, hell, she's got jugs and coolers, and it's quite a sight. I mean, really.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to remember the last time I was in the Kroger's over in Kanawha City. It was nothing to go in there and find out that see the water aisle just freaking empty. I mean, I know it was wiped out in August when we were shooting the video footage for the All In with Chris Hayes Coal Country special. I walked into Kroger's and I mean it had been the water aisle had been completely picked over.
Yeah, and that's a big store there in Kanawha City.
Yeah,
I mean one of the bigger ones. Yeah. Yeah, I don't see so much of that, but it's Yeah, I mean, I've been drinking it. I'd really have little choice. You know, at some point, you just kind of throw your hands up and say, hell, it's just not worth it.
So nobody's gone into the water buffalo business?
Well, here's the one thing I want to get back to on that real quickly. It was in the local paper. I'm sure this didn't make the national news, but just last month, I believe it was December, it might have been in November, there was a yellow substance floating down the river towards the intake.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, everyone went into a panic. Come to find out it was paint because the city, their shop is there. Well, hell, the sewer force main's got a hole in it going across the river. But that's okay. So every time the lift station kicks on, every time the pumps kick on a lift station, it's pumping sewer water into the river. And it's been like that for a while. No one knew it until the yellow paint got in it.
Jesus. And again, that's West Virginia. But why should anybody anywhere in this country, where profit is king, why should anybody think that their lives are any different? Now, so it might be different in a civilized state, but for all those red states, you got no reason to feel comfortable. You got no reason to feel complacent or like everything's okay and you're safe. Jesus, I forget what city was tested. But I saw a story recently, in fact, Agnes pointed it out to me, that there was testing done in, it was in Milwaukee. It was in Milwaukee. They tested the water supply there and found shocking concentrations of metformin. Now, anybody who deals with type 2 diabetes probably knows what metformin is. It also goes by the name glucophage. It's a fairly natural drug that's been around since the 1920s and is quite effective in managing diabetes, but scientists were shocked to find out that it was occurring in such tremendous concentrations, and apparently it is having an effect on the aquatic life in the water around the output from the water treatment sewer system of the Milwaukee area.
Why would they find was every diabetic in that area throwing out the medication?
No, it's just excreted, Alex.
When dead fish starts showing up, people start wondering what's in the water.
Well, you know, there was a thing that I hear a while back, a few years ago, before aquapocalypse, of they did testing, and the amount of prescription drugs going back into the water system, because the water companies don't test for that. That's not one of the things they're mandated to test for. So you're drinking medications by proxy and don't even know it, because you don't know what concentrations they're in, because we don't test for that. That was actually what they said.
And by the way, the testing was of Lake Michigan. I mean, you know, great, big, humongous, huge Lake Michigan. And this story goes back to, it is dated January 2nd. They're talking about there's more than one way to measure prescription drug use in modern society. The most direct method is just to count up prescriptions filled by America's pharmacies. That would show, for instance, that more than 180 million prescriptions for diabetes drugs were dispensed in 2013. Or you could test the treated water coming out of sewage facilities such as the South Shore plant in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. That approach reveals that in the Lake Michigan waters outside the plant, the diabetes drug metformin was the most common personal care product found by researchers with the School of Freshwater Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. More importantly, according to their latest research, the levels of metformin were so high that the drug could be disrupting the endocrine systems of fish.
Drink hearty, America.
Jesus. Yeah.
How good those fish tasty, huh?
Say what, Bill?
Tasty.
Well, all those fish I used to catch, and they'd be frozen within an hour, and, you know, you're eating them, and you wonder why what you're eating sometimes, you know, because of the changes in the water. The Uri got really bad. The reason you can say Uri's a lot cleaner today is the return of the smallmouth bass. They do not live in trash. Those fish never are harbored. And we had a fish here that people were selling the blue something or other, and it's been extinct for years. And they also killed, in the 1880s, they were killing muscle worms like crazy. Up around Fremont, Ohio, in that area, the fish would be going in and out of the lake, and they'd be standing there killing them. So that's where the carp came over here as a food source. And fish, states were fighting over who got so much carp. I'm not talking about the Asian carp. That's a whole different trip. The ones there, they got nets up to try to keep them out of the Great Lakes. And the freighters came through from the seaway, and they dumped stuff in the lake, junk fish, when they blew out their ballast, you know? Oh, well, progress is our most important product, you know?
Well, and
you're talking about, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
You were talking about those carp, Bill, that are flying up and dive bombing people in their boats.
Yep.
Well, funny that that's a great segue into something. The DHHR announces 2014 sport fish advisories. And this is for West Virginia, which includes the Ohio River, which, by the way, belongs to West Virginia.
Yes, it does.
It's named after Ohio. The advisory, and I'm just going to read you the Ohio River one because it's probably one of the most polluted. Ohio River Valley Water Sanitation Commission, advisory for striped hybrid bass for one meal a month has been revised to 6 meals per year due to newer information indicating increased polychlorinated biphenyls.
Polychlorinated biphenyls. That's PCBs.
Biphenyls, yeah. Yeah. And the levels from the Pennsylvania border to Bellevue Lock. We'll skip
where could those possibly be coming from?
Well, you tell me, with all the steel mills and the chemical plants and all that. I was trying to find the Kanawha River, which is
I wonder if there's ironic. I wonder, and see, that's PCBs, and that's common. That's love canal stuff.
Yeah. Well,
but wait till the fracking fluid starts bioaccumulating.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Was it Lock Gilly? With the personal toxic dump waste over there?
Yeah.
I assume that nothing has changed there, that they're still operating without a permit.
Oh, sure.
Just, business as usual.
Well, we wouldn't want the DEP getting in there and mucking things up by
jobs.
Yeah, jobs. I mean, somebody's got a job poisoning people over there.
That's all you got to say is jobs. I guess you just have to live around here to understand it.
Hey, is Roger out there still?
Yeah, hey, Roger.
I'm
here.
The people in power and these elitists and the very rich, what do they drink? What do they eat? Are they eating the same crap and drinking the same polluted water? I mean, aren't they doing this? I mean, are they protected from all the shit that they've done?
Funny you should say that.
Hey, I just wanted to know if Roger's getting any reports about Fukushima radiation on the North Coast.
No, I'm not. And as a matter of fact, right now I'm not home. I'm up in Eugene, Oregon. My first grandchild on Saturday, and my wife and I are up here playing granny and grandpa and helping out new mom with baby.
Aw, congratulations, Roger.
Well, I figure when you turn 70, you at least ought to be a grandparent once, and I'm not quite 70, but I'm now a grandparent.
Congratulations, Roger.
Okay, now, on the water issue, in Humboldt County, when they put in their water system, they had two pulp mills, each using 20 million gallons of water a day, and the populace used 20 million gallons. We no longer have pulp mills. Our water system can supply an extra 40 million gallons of water a day. Water on the North Coast is a renewable resource, but California state law says, unlike Alaska that can sell their oil and give everybody a check, a water system can't sell their water for a profit and give a check to the people who live in the area. And this particular water system is the only water system that I'm aware of that when they put the dam in to make the flow so they could suck the river water out of the river, opened up 17 miles of river that used to go dry in the summer. Now it doesn't go dry. It improved the spawning habitat. It improved the fisheries. And it gave us unlimited water. And we have 40 million gallons of water a day that we can't do anything with. And if we don't figure out what to do with it by 2020 or 2025, something like that, the state's going to revoke our water permit. And it reverts to the state. And I don't know what the state's going to do with it then, but we've got plenty of fresh water, and we can't do anything with it because of rules and regulations.
Yeah, well, to get back real quick to what Alex asked about the rich and the poor and all that, the one thing that I thought would come of this a year ago, within this year time span, when that shit got in the water, it didn't just affect the poor people or the people on this side of the river, or there's people on that side of it. It was a 9-county area. So it affected everybody, right down to the governor's mansion, the Capitol building. I mean, everybody. The one thing that I thought that we would have gotten out of this was would be some decent legislation to regulate these above-ground tanks. And I think what we got out of that was mediocre at best. Not even that. Well, you know, Bob explained it earlier in the program. Well, yeah, our tanks are, we like them. They're good. Here you go. Here's your piece of paper. And, you know, DEP just kind of goes away. And anyone thinks, well, you just bring the federal government into it. And I think I've mentioned this before. Anytime there's a complaint filed in this state over water or Clean Air, Clean Water Act violations, the state, the DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, has the authority to, for better word, usurp that. They've got like 60 days to answer it. So within, usually on the 58th or the 59th day, they'll say, oh yeah, we're investigating that. And so EPA goes away. Is that about right, Bob?
That's about how it plays.
I mean, you just can't really win when the cards are stacked against you like that. It's just it's a terrible system, and it's I don't see it changing. I yield my time.
You've been watching too much C-SPAN.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
You brought up fracking a few minutes ago. Excuse me. And I heard something earlier that I just couldn't believe. Apparently, they want to frack on Yellowstone.
Well, that's I thought I read that somewhere not too long back. Maybe I'm wrong. Or they want to frack near Yellowstone. I can't think of there's not a lot in this life I can think of much more stupid than fracking next to a super volcano.
Yeah. Yeah, I almost fell out of my chair when I heard that earlier. So we may not be around much longer.
Well, I remember less than we figured. Devotees of old 1950s B-movie science fiction might remember, and I can't remember the name of the film. It was black and white, I think. But there had been some attempt to drill deeply into the earth, and I guess we drilled too deeply, and it turned out the earth was going to blow up or something. And so there was this desperate attempt to build rockets to head to, you know, who knows where. And it was all about the desperate people trying to desperately get on the rockets. And I remember seeing this as a little kid, and it horrified me. I mean, there weren't any ugly monsters coming out of any swamps or anything, but it was conceptually terrifying that, you know, the whole planet could be effing effed.
Yeah. Well, I was getting bad B-video glimpses of Armageddon when he's talking about, I'm going to push through the gas pocket, and Yellowstone explodes. You know?
Right.
There was another sci-fi movie that had when the earth cracked, and I'm not quite sure what it was that started to crack, but it was something.
That may be the same. That may be the same thing, Roger.
Going all the way around the world, and everybody was in a panic.
Was it caused by hydraulic fracturing?
No.
Well, the one I'm thinking about was caused by some kind of drilling.
Gee, the irony.
We call it human arrogance.
The movie I'm thinking about was probably sometime in the 50s, because I was a little kid.
I seem to remember something like that on like Channel 40 Sunday movies when I was a kid.
Anyhow, just a quick one. Bob, you got my address on those squash seeds?
Yes, and they're going to be coming to you.
Okay. That's just, I gave you my addy, and I saw that you viewed it, and, you know, et cetera.
Am I okay mailing them in this kind of brutal-ass frozen weather?
You might want to wait till March.
Okay. Well, I mean, they're sitting right here, and I don't think they're going to germinate in the studio.
No, the studio's nice and cool. But Well, I don't know. I mean, if you take them down to the post office, they'd be indoors or in a truck or on an airplane or whatever. And when they get to my house, it's not brutal weather. And the kid's picking up the mail every day, so they'd go inside. Shouldn't be a problem.
Cool. By the way, Alex, you started something a little bit ago.
Yes, I did.
Ron and Raleigh wrote in, since it's confession time, I have been in my checkered past a bodyguard for a fille de joie. We all have our crosses to bear.
I like the
use of the French. I thought it was nice.
Well, when you all were talking about that, I don't, you know, how the hell does that even work?
See, neither Sandra nor I can figure it out.
I don't know if I want to know, Alex.
Oh my God, are we back at ass playing?
Yeah, we're back.
He had left that.
No, we're back. We're back there, Sandra, and it's all your fault.
Back there.
We've come full circle.
No pun intended, back there, huh?
Oh boy.
Yeah, no, right. Jesus.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Did your worm come back yet?
No, the worm is gone. I just happened to notice last night that the worm in my mezcal bottle had left me a nasty note and said, to the devil with you, hillbilly, I'm going back to Mexico. Look how cold it is here.
I said, adios.
A diablo cantu.
Could I do a good news story?
I suppose so.
You talked about on the Green News Report, the high-speed rail.
Yeah.
I mean, breaking ground on a project is a big deal because that means there's follow-on already in the works. And you know what I mean by follow-on?
Yeah.
The stuff is being built to put in the ground to raise, do whatever. And once you start doing follow-on, investors come in. And you want to know how they're going to... Jobs. Yeah. You know how they're going to... You wanted to know how they're going to power that? They're supposed to be building solar and wind farms along the route.
I would have guessed coal.
In California? When Jerry Brown just said we were going to be on 50% renewable energy by 2030?
But now, wait a minute. Jerry Brown is in favor of fracking.
He's changing his tune, though.
Well, he may be changing it, but as of last year's Democratic convention, he was in favor of fracking. Yeah, but didn't you read his thing that came out from the inauguration?
Yeah, I read it, but I don't believe it.
Well, how is she going to make a boom in power production but put in that damn high-speed rail?
All I'm saying is that I have spent time talking to Jerry Brown, and he is a very smart man, and he's also a consummate politician.
Oh, yeah.
And Jerry Brown's a nice guy, but I just don't trust him.
He's doing legacy thing now.
I understand.
Did you read the stories about comparing him to his daddy?
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, he is certainly just in terms of what he's done so far, he has certainly eclipsed Arnold. Mercifully, yeah. Arnold's back into filmmaking.
Yeah, well, we're not broke anymore. Plus,
no, Jerry Brown is going to use
a quarter of $1 billion of the cap and trade money from the polluters on that high speed rail.
Smarky, I agree. He's doing great things. I just don't fully trust him.
Well, I'm just saying there'll be boom times in the valley once that thing starts going.
But cap and trade is a job killer.
Oh. I was thrilled. I mean, that's America's first high speed rail project, right? Real high speed rail. You know, European style.
We still got that federal money hanging out there, too.
And is that a bit of clarification? Is that going to be a run? I mean, it's obviously San Francisco to L.A., but it's going to be San Francisco to L.A. It's an express. It's not going to stop at every. It's not going to stop every 15 minutes and pick people up, or is it?
No, there's not that. I mean, maybe in Fresno. Fresno, Sacramento, you know, just the big cities.
It'll probably have about four stops on the way between San Francisco and L.A.
Bakersfield.
Well, the question is it going to come east over to Sac or not? If it's starting in San Francisco.
Yeah, when eventually it'll go up through Sac and they'll bring it all the way up through the valley to Washington State.
Well, did they ever make the decision whether to go through Altamont or further south? Were they going to do the 152 route or the northern route?
They're just going to start building it. Once they start building it in the Central Valley, then they can, you know, build in the middle and go out, basically.
Let me ask a larger question. How hale and hearty is Jerry Brown?
Oh, excellent.
Healthy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Very.
Well, because Sandra?
Well, hopefully he'll, croak out. I mean, I'm not a fan. I think he's hella suspect, and, you know, he has this, I saw this speech he gave at some politician who died, but his whole thing was like, he's really into that some people are unsavable. You know, all his Catholicism comes to play. He set up this sort of rainy day fund to siphon off money for his sister's company. Oh, no. I'm not a fan. I think he really should just... Well,
but,
he can't.
But health-wise, he's healthy.
Well... Yeah, unfortunately for us.
Doesn't he do yoga, eat artisanal food, and sprouts on a daily basis?
Oh, my God.
Well, the reason I asked, and I had a feeling there would be some pushback from Sandra, because we've talked about this in the past, but the reason I ask is he'll be 76 years old the first week of April. If he were a little bit younger... regardless of, I'm not talking about policies. I'm talking about political performance. If he was a little bit younger, wouldn't people be hooting and hollering about him being the obvious challenger to Hillary?
Oh God, they want anybody to challenge Hillary.
I don't know if he'd, outside the California, he'd have that kind of pull.
I think he's probably been there, done that already.
Well, he's too, and he's kind of ancient. I think this is his last gasp.
Well, that was my point. But at least within the circles that I read and move in, so to speak, there is a, you see it every day. People writing about the possibility of Elizabeth Warren running for president, more with the style of a supplicant reciting a prayer. Now there's a little subset of people who think that that Jim Webb, former Republican Navy Secretary under Reagan, that somehow he's and what's going on is a determined, and I don't blame people. This is, a determined desire to see somebody challenge Hillary Clinton for the nomination. Now this
is I don't know who you're gonna get because all those people you just named. I'm like, I really do think the only thing that can stop her is her stupid husband. I mean, you heard that his name came up in the whole Dershowitz, that whole business.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, Clinton's, name came up in that whole, lollapalooza.
What is, that thing, and that thing, let's take a moment, Sandra. That thing is beginning to get a little bit of life out there First, it was that this well-heeled, well-to-do, filthy rich American was basically pimping for Prince Andrew.
Yeah, well, he's so slimy, so none of that surprises me. But and Dershowitz, he can go on the TV. You know, I don't. You know, I think he's hella suspect too. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But yeah, Bill's email and phone number came up in some of the data they presented. So.
I mean, and the thing is, this is a data drill down that almost seems WikiLeaks-ish, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because he was riding all over the world in Epstein's plane. All of a sudden, he stopped in 2005, probably around the time he found out that, oh, wait, you do 12-year-olds? And they backed off.
And I don't know if you caught it or not. I didn't mean to. But I caught where Lawrence O'Donnell had Dershowitz on his program last night.
I couldn't, but yeah.
No, Dershowitz came across like a pro wrestler. Bring them on. I'll prove that they're wrong. I've never been to New Mexico. I can't spell New Mexico.
Well, I mean, he's doing what, you know, what I always say when people are accused of something they should do, you know, come out swinging. But he's just so suspect, the fact that he was instrumental in working on the agreement for Epstein, initially, is dubious because he made sure that him and Andrew and all these other slime bags weren't, you know, pointed to. But I guess these women found another way.
Well, what was interesting was that Lawrence O'Donnell, and I don't always agree with him either. I don't always agree with many people, but Lawrence O'Donnell just burnt him to the ground because after he delivered, without challenging anything that he said about whether or not he was out there having sex with teenagers, underage teenagers at that, he let him go through his thing and then said, Alan, I happened to notice that you were interviewed by Newsmax. And my little ears perked up, and I went, oh, what? Because, yeah, he's a darling of the weirdo right wing now. And he was quoted by Newsmax as saying, and I don't want to necessarily get into a discussion of the nuts and bolts of the case, but France has rewarded every terrorist ever. And I thought Lawrence O'Donnell was going to come out of his chair. And Dershowitz was right there, screaming about how France isn't mean enough to the dirty Muslims.
Oh, he's probably still tripping on the Dreyfus incident from the teens, that guy. So that's interesting.
Well, he was around for it, wasn't he? I've got a friend who says that anybody who ever delivered a cold cup of coffee to Alan Dershowitz qualifies as a Nazi in Alan Dershowitz's list of Nazis.
Yeah, no, he's just terrible. So it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, all this. Anyway, listen, I'm going to sign off, but it was great being on the porch.
Oh, it was wonderful to have you here. I hope you'll join in again.
Yeah, I know it was, you know, really shallow and smut-driven, but...
Keep it coming, Sandra.
Okay, listen, you guys have a good evening.
You have a great weekend.
All right, bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
I don't think France was too light on Muslim terrorists today.
No, they weren't, and they have imprisoned, they have pursued. And did you notice that they managed to be considerably more successful in dealing with these? And see, we're going into it, but in dealing with these terrorists than say the United States might be. I mean, consider it. Well.
Well, I want to know if they're going to rename the Freedom Fries within Washington in the Congressional Cafeteria, if they're going to rename Freedom Fries French Fries.
And bring back the French toast?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey,
CNN.
No.
CNN International had some flaming blonde nationalist French lady on last night who was just insane.
Oh, Marine Le Pen?
I forget her name, but wow.
Hitler's little sister?
Yeah, pretty much. Apparently, they've got some pretty big clout in that country now, and this is just going to help.
Well, we've mentioned time and again that although it is not reported much, the right wing fascism, let's call it what it is on the march in Europe. The generation that fought and beat back fascism is mostly dead now, and so everybody's forgotten. And fascism always feeds on bigotries, prejudices, biases, and economic frustration, and it always finds an other to blame. So the situation is ripe in Germany. It's ripe in France. It's ripe. God knows it's ripe in Greece. In Greece, the Greek fascists are mad at the Egyptians. The Germans are mad at the Turks. The French are mad at the Muslims, many of whom are from their former Algerian colony.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that France, there's a history of the French and how they've treated North African peoples through colonization and all the horrible things and racism and everything that came from that. There's a long, long history of this.
I already did. Somebody had to say that.
Well, in the history of the French Foreign Legion, too.
I just went out and watered the back 40.
Watered?
Yeah.
Well, feeling
you're
all...
drinking way too much beer, Sparky, if you can water 40 acres.
Water's deep.
It's not 40, but I like to call it back 40.
Oh, by the way, note coming in from Carol relative to our conversation about party politics and presidential politics. Carol says, it doesn't matter who challenges Hillary. Willard's running again. He's coming to save the day.
God.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Jeb, too. Didn't Jeb Bush just resign from something?
Oh, he's resigned from all of his nonprofit boards, Alex. And, of course, I had not heard that remark from Mother Bush until Sandra mentioned it, but I find that encouraging. For once, I'm in agreement with her.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to hand it to Jebby on a silver platter and take it.
I agree.
Sort of like 2000.
Oh, no. Please don't cheat me out of the clown car circus. Back in 2012 was such a delight with people arguing that the best birth control was an aspirin between the knees and Rick Santorum out there saying, no, I said blah, people.
Yeah.
Granted, it's a high bar to achieve above, but I want to, you know, I have faith in the Republicans. I think they can at least try.
They won't disappoint, in other words.
Oh, Jesus, look at the first day of their congressional leadership. I mean, are you kidding?
Yeah, with their legitimate rape.
They wasted no time being jackasses, did they?
Well, they're in the mix, and I think it's going to be a frothy mix.
Oh, I got some good news.
Ooh. Yeah, go ahead, Spartan.
That was a Santorum comment.
Yes, it was.
I had a guy that called me that was interested in buying my dad's lathe. Now, he has to sell a boat before he can even think about coming and look at it. But if he sells the boat, he says he's going to come look at it. If I get rid of the lathe, I can start putting in the solar panel equipment.
Ooh.
Is this a wood or metal?
Metal.
Yeah, they can get pricey.
And it's an antique, too, isn't it?
Well, yeah. You've seen the pictures of it. I think Ferg can describe it to you if you do. But I'm asking $2,000 for it.
I bet it works like a champ, too.
It just needs a new belt.
We had a company up here in Cleveland for years, and I mentioned the name to somebody. They never heard of it. outfit called Warner and Swayze. They built some of the greatest machine tools this world's ever seen. But they're gone. Well,
this lathe came from... Bill, this lathe originally came from, like, Cincinnati, Ohio, sometime back in the early 20th century or 1800s.
Yeah, they built some down there, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did something other than kill hogs down there. That, Cincinnati had the nickname Porkopolis for a long time. Don't ask me why. Well, I think it's because they had George's father in them down there.
Michael may have heard of this place. This lathe came from Miner's Foundry and Manufacturing Building in Nevada City in 1965.
Oh, email coming in from Steve in China. I still love saying that. He says, subject line, scram, it's the cops. In an age of postmodern anxieties and the boredom and horror Baudelaire reckoned the central condition of modern culture, it probably makes as much sense to read literature as to lament the historical ignorance of the mob. But, to the police, you get the quality you pay for and demand. The cops are afraid, too. And why not? Because those in power have seen to it that legislation is written, allowing those previously without any option than to shit their pants may now have an option to do so first and shoot, or shoot and do their business later. We would do well to follow the recommendation of peacetime military standards as well. When on watch aboard a Navy vessel, I can remember not being particularly moved by the fact that I had a weapon and ammunition, though unless absolutely necessary, the weapon was unloaded, the clip on my utility belt, and only to be inserted when ready for use. Now, a sailor trained to operate sonar equipment on the job is definitely not necessarily suited for police duty, but it is amazing what a few seconds of preparing to use deadly force can do for not actually using it. As for bad cops, wealth and power protect with deadlier force that which they fear most to lose, greater wealth. So much for political history. Regards, Steve in China. Wow.
Well, just think, we'd have a 12-year-old blockhead left if they hadn't let more than 2 seconds to think about whether to blow him away or not.
Yeah. And what did having the gun cocked and locked do for the cop who was ambushed in Paris?
Yeah.
Or, because I prefer not to let things simply blow by, as Sandra noted, 2,000 people in Nigeria. When a shitload of Boko Haram lands on your villages, unless you're already sitting at the walls with a siege mentality, hell, I guess what I'm saying is that shooting back, your odds are not particularly good unless you're waiting for the other guy to fire first. And waiting for the other guy to fire first means that you live in a constant siege mentality, and that will drive you insane yesterday. Make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
So is Nigeria going to become another Sudan?
Boko Haram is trying to make it one.
And the NRA is salivating.
Well, the NRA wants America to be Nigeria.
Yep.
When I was in the military, I did some shore patrol duty in Guantanamo Bay and Jamaica and Bermuda and a couple other places. And the only thing I ever carried was a nightstick.
Yeah.
That's about all you really need.
Military shore patrol.
Yeah, but that's really all you needed to deal with a drunk sailor, wasn't it, Roger?
Well, I never pulled it out because I was afraid the drunk sailor would be able to beat the shit out of me.
Yeah, I got a right-wing fundamentalist sister who was an MP in Germany at the Pershing 2 sites.
Oh, by the way, I watched the movie Selma the other night. Nightsticks are really prevalent in that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I heard, I read a great analogy for a lot of these white wingers. Charlie Pierce said the other day, these are people who would have been on the wrong side of the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Right about that, yep.
Hmm. And hey, they're multiplying.
Hey, Barbie's in the group. Good evening, Barbie.
Hey, Barbie.
Howdy there. I'm here.
How are you this evening?
I just got home and had to tune in.
Wait a minute. You actually went out into the frozen hellscape?
I had to have my hair cut.
Well, yeah.
No,
yeah.
That was important.
A woman's got to do what a woman's got to do.
Absolutely.
And I know all about that, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Really, Alex?
I had to drop my wife off at the hair salon yesterday while I went shopping.
Hey, I got a haircut yesterday.
Well, I haven't got my hair cut. My hair's down to my shoulders.
Where's Miss Carol?
I checked in with Carol Baker a little bit ago, and she said that she'd called in twice this week and felt like she'd already had her turn.
Okay.
Like I posted in the chat, she took the night off.
Okay. I thought maybe something was wrong.
No. She's been sending me brilliant. Oh, you missed the brilliant observation of the evening, Barbie. I hate to tell you, but I think it might be best if you go to the archives for it so that you can hear it as it developed in real time.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's salacious and shallow. And your sister provided very nearly the perfect coup de grace for it all.
Oh, she's good that way.
Yep.
I got to see this. Did she print it out anywhere?
Oh, no. It's just in the course of the running dialogue that happens here.
Wow.
It's let's see, what was the word Sandra used? It's really smutty.
Oh. She's good that way too.
Oh, hum.
Somebody got a radio going in the background?
Not anymore. I just turned the TV off.
Okie doke.
Okay. That helps. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, we are 22 minutes before the hour, and just to let folks know that we've been quite successful this evening in knocking down the last remaining fundraising for the week, and we got $95 to go if anybody wants to jump in and help. And this isn't me saying anybody in specific. No. It's just that's where we are. If anybody, you know, $5, doesn't matter. All help is great help. What do you mean? What do you mean, Carol Abel? It's too hot there for hair.
It means a long-haired hippie like me had to cut their hair.
No, you got to grow it.
I can't. It's too hot here. When it's 100 degrees, you don't want hair on your neck.
Well, when I go to Arizona in 2 weeks, when the summer comes, am I going to experience that too?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
But it's a dry heat.
Yeah.
It's oh, yeah, that's right.
It's the inside of the oven. It's not the sauna.
Just tie it back. You can deal with it.
Oh, yeah, you can. But it gets pretty hot here.
My wife said she's going to braid mine for me.
Braid it. That'd be nice.
I love it.
I want to see what I look like with a braid.
Yeah. If it's long enough, you can braid it yourself, Sparky. I used to braid mine.
Nobody ever taught me. She's going to teach me.
It's easy.
Okay.
As long as you're doing a 3-strand and not a 4-strand.
I don't know what I'll do.
See, Roger.
Well, 4-strands are a little harder than 3-strands. 3-strands you can do behind your head. 4-strands, you got to look at what you're doing.
Yep.
Fletcher, Felcher, whatever.
That felching is really gross.
And I'm not going to, we're not, no.
Well, I took a chance today. I had my health aid see me. And I'm thinking to myself, Bill, how many times in your life would you ever let a woman with a razor anywhere near your throat?
Yeah, but this was, I presume, some sort of safe razor and not the straight variety.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah, that's Yeah, the old street radio, you know.
Hey, Bob,
guys,
you ever...
What?
Bob, you ever use that one I sent you?
No, I have. I've got it set aside, and I'm going to do some, do a little bit of work on it, and put a nice fine edge on it. And it's sharp, but I've got the wherewithal to really bring it back to its glory.
Oh, okay. Give us a report when you do.
I will. I need to find my Dremel, so that I can polish it up to its mirror finish.
You actually use a straight razor, Mark?
I made a point several years ago, Bill, because my dad used to say that he always wished he'd learned to use one. And just for some reason or another, I've always been fascinated with them because there's so much brilliant technology involved. Plus, it's very, very sustainable. So I made a point of learning to shave with a straight razor.
Oof.
And you have to be very, very careful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it really, once the terrifying case of nerves and the handshakes, pass, you really don't want to shake with a razor in your hand. Once that passes, it becomes a pretty relaxing ritual. I mean, it's, you know, when you go with the towels and the steam and the nice brush and the mug and you work up and you spend time working up a really kick-ass lather, and you strop the razor and everything, what you've got there is a solid 30 minutes of just head-clearing, focusing me time.
Meditation.
It is. It's meditation with a deadly weapon.
Yeah, just don't think about politics when you're doing it. You get real pissed off.
Right.
I sent you the cowbell for when you get the shakes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know what? Wait a minute. I owe a cowbell here. This is for champagne dressing.
Woo!
Do we really need to go back there?
Back there.
That's as far as we're going.
Too late.
Bump bump.
By the way, note coming in from Timothy. He says, "Hey Bob and hey Porch Party. I was going to join the chat just to comment, but I forgot my password. I first heard the name Alan Dershowitz portrayed by Amy Goodman as a Zionist douchebag who sabotaged Norman Finkelstein's academic career. I then rediscovered him on CNN as a respected legal analyst and later as a passenger in the O.J. Simpson clown car. Hey, I was only 10 during the trial. I couldn't keep track of all those freaking lawyers. Thank goodness Lawrence O'Donnell helped Mr. Dershowitz show his Zionist douchebag true colors in the mainstream media again. And P.S., thanks for the Nigeria news I'd missed. Sigh." Timothy has family in Nigeria, and I think Sandra's point is well taken. How is it that the butchery of 2,000 people just can't quite crawl up the for-profit media food chain?
Because they're not white and they're not sexy for the dumb masses to get off on.
You know, that's the first place I go to, but God Almighty, is the racist? I mean, if that is true, then that is a stunning indictment of what passes for journalism. I mean, it is just like the underreporting. At least I saw it on MSNBC last night. The underreporting of the NAACP office bombing. How much coverage, and I was thinking about this the other night, you remember the backpack bomb that could have taken out God knows how many people in Washington State a couple of years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that for MLK Day?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It was in Tacoma or some one of those really horrible places up there in Washington.
That didn't get splashed all over the headlines. It seems like the only time stuff gets splashed all over the headlines is if someone of arguably Muslim affectation, because Muslim is a religion, not a race or an ethnicity, is alleged to be the perpetrator.
Well, I mean, back to Rwanda and how little, you know, million people are being killed and then nowhere.
There's no star power for Nigeria yet.
Ray wrote in a little bit ago, and
Nigeria needs a George Clooney.
Ray said, you know, Nigerians aren't economically viable, and he wasn't saying that as an assertion of, no, he was. It's all these responses that we have, that the people are wrong colored, that they're not economically viable. All of these things are cynical responses, and I think they're more cynical than sarcastic. But they're also very real. On the other hand, Ray points out bad cops are economically viable.
It'll make the headlines, Bob, when somebody in the right wing blames Obama for it.
Court doesn't need to do everything.
Well, look, let's take into account Nigeria qua Nigeria. Why is an outfit like Boko Haram on the move? Nigeria, for instance, was successful in making sure that the Ebola epidemic didn't catch fire there. But by the same token, Nigeria has been brutalized by the oil industry for God knows how long. And you know what? Wherever the hydrocarbon extraction industries go in the developing world, chaos, disorder, and horror soon follow. Because
and drop off the radar.
Well, yeah, but we think of the oil industry as we see it here. But even for what little regulation still exists of them, they can't go around shooting people in the dark and still of the night. When the transglobal, transnational hydrocarbon industry goes somewhere else, they revert to type and start behaving like the thugs that they are. And so you see the murders that have transpired in Nigeria. You see the murders that have happened in Colombia at the hands of the coal industry. And I
Ecuador for the oil industry.
Exactly. The gold industry and the hell that they have unleashed in Central America and South America. And even when they're being watched, you know, look at the giant sludge dam release that happened in British Columbia, was it? A couple of months back. Man, that thing was barely a blip on the radar, and then it was gone again. And then there's the sludge poisoning of a river in a state near the U.S. border in Mexico. Yeah, Devin, you were going to say something?
They only need what's under the ground. What's on top is all overburden.
Yeah, whether it's geologic overburden or anthropological overburden, or you know, meat overburden,
or herbological, or you know, whatever, doesn't matter.
We are now all overburdened, my friend. Is that what you're saying, Devin?
Yes. You hadn't figured that out yet?
Oh, I figure it out, and then I go back into my, then I go back to sleep, having awakened from the nightmare, and or have, I don't know, maybe it happens in the nightmare, and I reawaken into the nightmare. I don't know.
As an old gold miner, you got to remove the overburden to get to the gold.
That's how we get moonscapes in West Virginia on top of mountains.
Yeah, well, I used to be a suction dredge river miner.
We take the overburden off of the beautiful black coal. We dump it in a creek.
We take the overburden off the bottom of the river and put it like 40 feet behind us so that we can get down to the bedrock to get the gold that's in the river.
Yeah, we don't do that here. We blast it off and we push it into
the river. And then the river, when it floods again, it covers everything you did up, moves everything out and cleans it all up again.
Oh, no, it stays like that here. Yeah, just push it over in the hall and forget about it.
Yeah. But, I mean, the old miners, when they used the big dredges, they left tailing piles all over Northern California.
The comments about going to Grafton to get water, that may not be the best idea either, because they can't inject all the frack waste underground. So what they can't, they take to the wastewater treatment facility, you know, that's built to clean out the turds. Only they're dumping chemicals in there and just running the standard process on it and discharging it.
Well, that brings me back to the water buffalo business. Is anybody doing that?
Well, they did for a while.
And not so much on a business basis, Sparky, but, for instance, Cold River Mountain Watch was delivering water as much as humanly possible. A lot of the young activists were delivering water. For a couple of years there, when Printer Holler had no water, the only reason they had fresh water was because Cold River Mountain Watch was delivering water daily and filling up barrels. This is the community where six different residences, a person in each home, came up with a form of brain cancer that occurs once in 100,000 people in the general population.
There's a video of those guys delivering water to a Printer in a documentary, Coal Rush.
Yeah.
Because we've got people that are just in the forest fire business out here. I mean, they move office trailers, they move porta potties, they move restrooms, and they have to move these big tanks with them. Got to bring the water with you, unless you can hook up to somewhere.
The problem now is, where are you going to get the water?
Yeah, during the water crisis here, Western American Water, they've got tankers, and they took them up the river to Montgomery, which is way above, up on the canal, and trucked it down here. Mm-hmm. The problem with that was, when you'd go to fill up your water jugs, which we did, a lot of times the truck would be gone because it'd be empty, and they only had like two trucks. So, you know, it's an hour trip, hour and mm-hmm. a half probably from where it was. So, you know. That's one of the reasons why I started. It was a couple months before we started drinking water here after all that. It was like end of March, somewhere in there, first of April, before we started drinking it.
After it was approved for use?
Yeah, yes. It's
fit to use. Fit for use.
Fit to use. Is the water safe? Well, it's fit to use. No, is the water safe? It's fit to use, and that's all you would hear.
That's all they'd say.
They wouldn't say it was safe.
Fit to use for what?
Well, it's fit to use. I mean, draw your own conclusions, right. Damn it.
As Gert said, this is a personal decision everybody's going to have to make personally.
That's right.
Well,
it's fit to use for washing coal. That's what it's fit to use for.
Safe enough for washing coal. Safe enough for me.
That's right. There was a guy that I overheard a conversation at the Steak Escape, of all places, talking about it sometime after. And he said, yeah, we use it all the time. He said, we mix it with diesel fuel to wash your coal. And I thought, well, where the hell does that stuff go when you get done with it? Well, it goes into coal impoundments is where it goes.
Down the magic sewer drain. Where everything's taken care of.
No, it goes behind the big dam.
Around here,
can
I say something for a minute? Around here, a lot of people, most people are on wells and everything. And because there's high mineral contents in the water, but people we filter our water for drinking. But a lot of people use this company called Mount Shasta Spring Water. big old blue trucks, and they run around, they bring you a couple 5-gallon jugs a week. And you got the water cooler dispenser you got in your, just for drinking water in your office or anything.
Yeah, it's called Tyler Mountain Water here. They get it out of the tap just like everybody else does.
Yeah, but I mean, here, Mount Shasta spring water kind of gives an connotation or whatever that's really pure. Because if you ever seen, there's a place called McLeod, California, that Nestle tried to put a bottled water plant in.
I read about that.
And they chased them out of town because they have some of the most purest water in the country. Comes right out of Mount Shasta, and they don't want nobody screwing it up.
Well, I don't blame them. Good for them, you know. But it's all about marketing.
Mm-hmm. And they could have used the jobs, but there's another bottled water plant on the other side of Mount Shasta in Weed, a town that had big fires last year.
Well, you know, not to get off the subject of that, but you talk about jobs. Here in the valley, the Chemical Valley, Bayer Crop Sciences, which used to be part of Union Carbide.
Which used to be, yeah.
Yeah, they had...
Bhopal.
Yeah, MIC, methyl
isocyanate. Yeah, the only other place on Earth besides Bhopal where they made methyl isocyanate.
Well, a number of years ago, in the Larvin unit, they make pesticides down there, that's what they make. They had an explosion. How many did it kill, Bob? I don't remember. 3 guys, 4 guys, something like that. But,
yeah, 4.
Pretty massive. Yeah, I believe it was 4. It burned for a couple days. You know, how many jobs are worth that? I mean, and there are houses not far from there. I mean, this is in a metropolitan area. I mean, there are a lot of people that live around that plant and in that valley. Well, hell, I live in the valley. How many jobs? I mean, is it really worth it? I mean, if we're all dead. I'm sorry. I get off on these rants.
Did you guys ever hear of the movie The Yes Men? Those two guys that pretend that they infiltrate all these big corporations. They've been on the media. Have you heard of The Yes Men?
Oh, I'm very familiar with them. But, hey, I gotta interrupt everybody. And I've got to say thank you and good night. We are at the end of the program, about a minute and a half to go. I want to thank you, Gerald, and Carol Abel, and Roger, and Sparky, and Alex, and Michael, and Devin, and Sandra, and Barb. Thank you all, one and all, for joining in the conversation. Thank you, Bill, in Cleveland, for participating. The time has flown right by. We have a magnificent time every Friday evening, Friday on the front porch here on the Horn. We will wrap up this evening, $95 short of our fundraising goal for the week. Anybody hearing the rerun who wants to jump in and help us finish that off, thank you very kindly for your assistance. Thanks, of course, always go out first and foremost to the people who share their time, all of you, in this conversation, however it is that you may participate. Thank you to those of you who keep us on the air, in some cases one and the same. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you Moran Monday. We've already got our first Moran.